Hello, Gallatin Valley and online listeners. You are listening to KGVM Bozeman Community Radio, broadcasting at 95.9 FM and streaming at kgvm.org. I'm Roxana, and this is Desert Oracle Radio Replay. I've mentioned in our recent shows that I've been doing a lot of exploring places around and adjacent to Montana. I imagine the boundaries of territories of early peoples consisted of rivers, mountains, and other geological features before Jefferson's big push to, quote, discover, unquote, the western U.S. But in our Desert Oracle episode today, released most recently by Ken Lane on July 21st, 2025, we're going to learn about survey lines and one surveyor in particular. Here is Mapping the Mojave with Colonel Henry Washington.
Desert Oracle Radio, the voice of the desert.
Night has fallen on the desert. And it's a relief, even if it's still 90 degrees out there. And the shade of night? Well, that'll drop down a bit, and sometimes it's downright pleasant out. Between about 4:25 and 4:45 a.m., by which time the unconquered sun is already returning to punish us all over again. Just for the crime of winding up in the Mojave Desert in summertime. Now and again, somebody will ask me, what's in the Mojave Desert? Where is that place? What's it about? Well, it's the hottest, driest American desert. Las Vegas is in the Mojave, as is Death Valley, and Mojave National Preserve, and Barstow, and Calico, and Victimville, and Ridgecrest, and Boron, and Baker, and God only knows what else. Too hot to look on the map. It burns the fingers touching a hot map in the glove box this time of year. Although it did cool off a bit last night, I was over at the lodge with the fellas. And somebody ran in and said, there's a SpaceX in the sky. And four or five of us wandered out, mostly to have a smoke. But a couple of guys were oohing and aahing, looking at the big vapor trail in the sky and the violet twilight sky. And I said, you know what, boys? One day that'll be rocket ships up there. When the worst of the summer comes, it doesn't matter how many hours I try to work, I just don't get much done. Slow-witted. I squint and look outside the windows and all the animals are hidden away. They'll come out again close to sundown. They are smarter than me. But they don't have to keep to the absurd human schedule either, which doesn't fit the desert in summertime. The animals don't have to worry about the post office or the bank or the truck repair shop with their erratic daytime hours. So that's all just to say that I'm still working on the new improved Desert Oracle Radio Studio, setting up a couple of new necessities as we work to return to our live nighttime call-in shows last done with any regularity in the months before lockdown, a half dozen years ago now. On last week's program, episode number 247, which is a narrated audio driving tour up the 247 from Yucca Valley all the way to Barstow, in case you missed it, you can look back on the podcast for the repeat. I mentioned how Old Woman Springs Road, State Route 247, got its distinctive name from the historic Old Woman Springs Ranch near the halfway point between Yucca Valley and Barstow. But who named the springs? And who was the old woman? First, the location, a well-watered spring at the northeastern base of the San Bernardino Mountains. 30 miles north of Yucca Valley along Highway 247. Well, this is private property, the ranch being fenced as is necessary if you don't want all the yahoos driving onto your land and tearing it up. The most beautiful aspect of living in the western United States is just how much of it is protected as national parks and monuments and forests and preserves. Vast tracts of wild public land. And we like it that way just fine. And we will keep it that way.
Desert Oracle Radio.
The Old Woman Springs Ranch is where Highway 247 bends from north to west. That's where the springs emerge. There's a picturesque grotto that surrounds the well's main source, the strong outflow, gathering in Edenic pools beneath tall cottonwoods, before traveling down various channels to a couple of good-sized ponds or small lakes, one with a little island. A cattleman named Swarty Swarthout homesteaded around the springs in 1907, keeping his livestock down there in the desert during the cold times, taking them out of the mountains before the snow started piling up. The lakes were dug out in the years that followed, and stately trees line each oasis. Old Swarty was joined in his endeavor by a cattle rustler named Charlie Martin, who later became chief of police in San Bernardino. There's a Clamper historical monument by the roadside with more of that story. A few lines more, anyway. Swarty was still up at Big Bear at his Heart Bar Ranch when he finally passed on at age 91 in the year 1963. The year Lyndon Johnson was elevated to the position of U.S. President. LBJ was in San Bernardino a few months later in 1964. It turns out Lyndon Johnson had lived there in San Bernardino for a few months in the 1920s, working as an elevator operator at the Platt Building at 5th and E Streets in downtown San Bernardino. But we were talking about being outside in the wild country, not working the elevator in Smogville. If you're looking at one of those big BLM maps we like to carry in our pickups and Jeeps and such with the big yellow section markers, Well, Old Woman Springs is in Section 31. That's how we tell which part is which on the U.S. public lands, according to the U.S. Public Land Survey. Each village or township has its own map of numbered sections. And this system was established in the United States back in 1785, or just a few years after the War of Independence came to its conclusion. The government official who proposed the system was Thomas Jefferson. And the reason to do it quickly was because many thousands of Revolutionary War veterans, including my ancestor William Wagner Lane of Amherst County, Virginia, were promised land grants on the Western frontier. The Western frontier that was then at the western edge of the original 13 colonies. Using teams of surveyors with measuring chains and compasses and corner markers and very specific note-taking, the U.S. Public Land Survey System followed manifest destiny across the country all the way to the Pacific. Go anywhere in the West today where there's public land, mountain or desert for the most part, and the locals in this or that little town will refer to various sections that they know and love and use for horseback riding or walking the dog or camping and fishing, whatever the outdoor recreation type. Those sections, usually 36 squares on a map page, each square consisting of 1 square mile or 640 acres, they surround the various townships and the villages. And all of these match up with east-west baselines and north-south meridians. When you're looking at a map on your phone today, it's all built around these meridians and baselines and sections. The man who performed those surveys in the Southern California mountains and deserts came from a long line of surveyors. His uncle was a surveyor back in Virginia, going back to the colonial days. His uncle actually ended the colonial days, as his uncle was George Washington, commander of the Continental Army and the first president of the independent United States. And his name, our desert surveyor, was Colonel Henry Washington, who had been working around Tallahassee after Andrew Jackson showed that Florida was ripe for the picking. So the Spanish were kicked out and the surveyors rode in, and the Mexican-American War wasn't too far behind. And after California joined the Union, Henry Washington headed out to perform the U.S. Public Land Survey there. He crossed his meridian and baseline on a ridge just north of Forest Falls and east of Mountain Home Peak in the San Bernardino Mountains. That's where the Henry Washington survey marker stands to this day. About 8 feet of pine tree trunk rising out of a dry stone pile, a tower of sorts, erected in November of 1852. I won't tell you where it is exactly, and even if you look it up, it's a 5-mile haul up a mountain. But that tower of stone and wood and bits of tin that act as reflectors that can be seen from miles away, it's called Washington's Monument. While running his meridian up through the Mojave, Henry Washington and his men, about a dozen of them, rode up to some well-watered trees and discovered a good spring there with a sort of Indian camp. Either one or two old Indian women were there, and all the men were gone. The old women were whiling away the day in the shade of the trees around the spring. The men of their tribe had gone up the mountains to gather pinyon nuts and maybe hunt some game. Surveyors are not paid to be poetic. The place names they give are plain and descriptive, so there's no doubt where you are. The words they write are generally read in a court of law over boundary disputes, so that's how the Old Woman Springs got their name. The year was 1855. From the Pacific at Port Hueneme, due east across the mountains to the Hollywood Bowl, and then onward over the San Bernardinos and all the way across the desert to the Colorado River. That's the baseline that sets up the mapping for Southern California. In the city of San Bernardino, it's still called Baseline Street, where the baseline runs through. There are baseline roads all over this country, again, especially in the West. When you're surveying the country, you need references, visible references, like mountaintops or big rivers or canyons. But especially the trees and boulders right there at the corners. The baseline in San Bernardino keeps going east, over mountains, over rivers. And once you get over the pass, the baseline continues over lots and lots of hot, dry Mojave Desert. Well, Henry Washington seems to have liked the work, and it seems like he was good at it. He liked the wild environment. Some people can't stand any other kind of work. Just the idea of a virtual human resources video conference meeting is enough to make them jump on a horse and go anywhere. Anywhere's better than here, when the here is nowhere and everybody knows that sort of here is the real nowhere, the void. It always troubles me when a beautiful, remote part of the world is referred to as the middle of nowhere, although I've said it myself from time to time, but mostly to scare off weekenders and rental cars when I'm talking about a place that I'd rather not ever see trending on Instagram or TikTok. The real nowhere is a corporate meeting room with a coffee pod machine and gray fake wood plank flooring and gray walls and gray people carrying gray laptops, their ears plugged, their eyes blurry and red from staring at a little video screen. And with somebody microwaving leftover fish or some kind of seed oil slop from the DoorDash and some kind of low-volume bump-bump thump noise from the various other computers leaking out the earbuds or just rudely being put out there straight from the laptop speakers. Coachella music, shopping music. It's the kind of place where you ask somebody what they do, what their job is, and once they get over the anxiety of needing to answer in person, it's just a string of meaningless jargon. You realize they don't know what they do either. Some video meetings, some forms due once a month. The bi-weekly classes with the latest glossary of allowed linguistic terms, workflow, mutual consent panels, etc. Colonel Henry Washington did not work that way, not when he was doing his life's work, which was outside surveying, camping out every night beneath the charging sky, the sea of stars, over mountains, over rivers, over deserts. And so Henry and his crew headed out from the direction of San Gorgonio, Old Grayback, as a few of us still call it, the seventh tallest peak in the 48 states. And they headed toward the Colorado River. You know, you can see Gorgonio from the top of Mount Whitney. The only time that survives in the historical record that Henry Washington had trouble with his work was with the bureaucrats in the new government office in Tallahassee. And so he got himself a commission at the new U.S. Public Land Survey Office in San Francisco, and he traveled by ship from the East Coast, and he headed straight out for the wild country once he got his assignment worked out and his survey party attached. Continuing from his monument in the mountains over today's San Bernardino, Colonel Henry and his party firmly reestablished the baseline at today's Yucca Trail, where the golf course ends, and then along today's Highway 62 for a mile, just a bit over a mile, then back to Yucca Trail, which then turns into Alta Loma when you pass La Contenta, and then Alta Loma ends at Quail Springs Road, which will take you into Joshua Tree National Park to the right. But Henry Washington has to stop here because of the mountain of boulders he describes in his notes. Exploring a small canyon there, the party found another spring, or more of a seep, as it had been dug out by local coyotes as a watering hole. The good, plain, descriptive name Coyote Hole Spring was given to the place. While the men also noted the many interesting petroglyphs in the area, the coyotes you encounter in this beautiful area today are the descendants of coyotes who lived here nearly 200 years ago. And they are some of my favorite coyotes around these parts. Although that doesn't mean they're tame, and it doesn't mean they should be toyed with, trifled with. They're comfortable getting fairly close to people, and they are especially comfortable killing and eating up any small dogs running off-leash around these parts. It's a dog-eat-dog world, no matter how pretty the scenery. That mountain of boulders is on the north side of Section 6 today, a local conservation area that the people of Joshua Tree convinced the county to keep when the BLM was ready to give it over to suburban developers in 1965. The northern boundary of Section 6 is Henry Washington's baseline, which becomes Baseline Road 2 miles east of the mountain. This baseline later became the northern boundary of Joshua Tree National Monument, now National Park. These things matter, and they matter for centuries after the work is done. Where the Tortoise Rock Casino stands today, the survey party went up to investigate an oasis just a half mile north from their baseline. Here, Henry Washington counted 29 palm trees around a well-watered oasis. Again, the survey team encountered a few local Indians who called the area Ma-Ra, apparently meaning land of little water. So Colonel Washington named the place the Oasis of Mara. That's one story, I think the one you hear most often. And those palms, well, those are California fan palms, our native desert palm tree, the ones that grow those little tiny dates, the pygmy dates. The Latin name for the palm tree is Washingtonia vilifera, named for Colonel Henry's uncle, George Washington. The 29 palms in is where you'll find that oasis today, long-living trees. Some you'll see today were surely there when the survey party came through nearly 2 centuries ago, but the number of palm trees changes over time. Some die, new ones grow, and a couple of years back, a lunatic set some trees on fire where the oasis of Mara stretches east. But there's still a lot of green there for the Mojave and a nice walking path, especially nice when it's not summertime. About November through early March, that's a good time to stroll from the old Park Service buildings to the 29 Palms Inn. And then you can go in and get some lunch, get a drink. Some people love the 29 Palms Inn in summertime. And why not? They've got a swimming pool and everything. They've got it a little easier than Henry Washington had it, but once again, he liked the backcountry. He liked sleeping rough out there. The road, baseline road, I mean, peters out around 2 miles east of here at one of California's most spectacular auto junkyards. There are a couple of different businesses here, some specializing in this or that brand, and if you've got an old car or truck, you've probably been out here more than once. About a square mile of wrecked old cars, a paradise for a certain kind of person. Beyond here lies nothing, as they say, except for the gun club shooting range in the canyon and the 29 Palms garbage dump behind that. But the true heads know that this is also where the harsh and majestic Pinto Mountains wilderness begins. Just a few thousand feet to the southeast. And when Highway 62 jogs to the south, past the old 29 Palms Airport, well, that's when 29 Palms Highway meets the baseline again for the first time since Yucca Valley. And here begins a tremendous landscape. Other than the ruins of some old mines, remnants of old mining camps, and a few shacks in the distance, it's just you and the road in the desert. Next stop, Vidal, California. Vidal Junction, to be precise. What's left of the haunted little town of Vidal is just to the right, where you can see Wyatt Earp's former home. I wrote a long chapter about that place in the book Desert Oracle, Volume 1. Oh, that's kind of a scary place out there. Well, that's where the deeply evil Solar Lodge cult was headquartered during the notorious events involving the burning of many rare letters from Aleister Crowley and the imprisonment of the 7-year-old boy who'd started the fire, the boy in the box. It happened right alongside the Manson family circus of blood from that same grim summer of 1969. From Amboy to Sizix and across the Great Mojave Wilderness, this has been episode 248 of Desert Oracle Radio, supported by listeners like you at DesertOracle.com or Patreon.com/Desert Oracle with soundscapes by Red, Blue, Black, Silver. Visit him on Bandcamp. Good night from the voice of the desert.
It's the bottom of the hour, and you are listening to Desert Oracle Radio Replay, broadcasting on KGVM, Bozeman Community Radio, at 95.9 FM, and streaming at kgvm.org. Let's have some readings about nature and the season. From Nature, One Day at a Time, by Kathy Katz, for July 27th, she writes, "Nighthawks are neither hawks as their common name implies, nor are they minor, as their scientific name suggests, which is Corydalis minor. The only other nighthawk in their genus is actually smaller. However, they are night birds. They begin feeding after sunset by swooping after insects. Known as flying insect traps, they buzz through the night skies, hunting for swarms of insects, catching them in their huge gaping mouths. Bristles around the nighthawk's beak protect its eyes as it flies into the thick clouds of insects. Nighthawks, of course, sleep all day, camouflaged by their mottled dead leaf plumage, inconspicuous on the sun-flecked branches where they roost. If this night bird were captured and forced to sleep during the night, would we call it an insomniac bird because it wouldn't sleep according to our schedule? A biological clock isn't a specific organ that can be reset like a watch. Rather, the timing mechanism is dispersed through every cell of a body. And then she closes with a quote from Peretz Lavi in The Enchanted World of Sleep. And Peretz writes, "We have no data on the exact number of delayed sleep phase syndrome sufferers, but the lack of public awareness of the syndrome dooms them all to a frustrating conflict with society." And for July 28th, in the 5th century, Hippocrates noted that malaria, a scourge for thousands of years, inflicted people mostly around marshy areas and not the inland residents. He concluded the problem was the bad air, or malaria, of the marsh. Female mosquitoes, Culicidae, are attracted to the warm, moist areas of marshes, ponds, lakes, anywhere warm water is available for them to lay eggs. The whining from mosquitoes is made by the female's wings and picked up by the male's sensitive antennae with thousands of fine, tiny hairs that receive the vibrations. He uses these signals to find her to mate. After mating, he takes off, probably to die, and she settles down to lay her eggs in the still, quiet water they need to survive. And then she closes with a quote from Diane Ackerman in A Natural History of Love. And Diane writes, "In these formal ways, men and women domesticate their emotional lives. But their strategies are different. Their biological itineraries are different. His sperm needs to travel. Her egg needs to settle down. It's astonishing that they survive happily at all." Next up, we've got a couple entries from Daily Observations, Thoreau on the Days of the Year, edited by Steve Grant. On July 27th, 1852, Thoreau wrote, "I should like to ask the assessors what is the value of that blue mountain range in the northwest horizon to Concord, and see if they would laugh or seriously set about calculating it. How poor, comparatively, should we be without it?" And on July 28, 1854, Thoreau wrote, "Methinks the season culminated about the middle of this month, that the year was of indefinite promise before, but that, after the first intense heats, we postponed the fulfillment of many of our hopes for this year, and having, as it were, attained the ridge of the summer, commenced to descend the long slope toward winter, the afternoon and downhill of the year. Last evening it was much cooler, and I heard a decided fall sound of crickets." And how about we take some time to pay attention to our night skies? From science.nasa.gov, here's a little information. They say Mars is visible for the first hour or two after it gets dark. You'll find it sinking lower in the sky each day and looking a bit dimmer over the course of the month as our two planets' orbits carry them farther apart. The crescent moon appears right next to Mars on the 28th, so you can look for that. And then they have a little discussion of a constellation you can look for called Aquila the Eagle. From July and into August is a great time to observe the constellation Aquila the Eagle. This time of year, it soars high into the sky for the first half of the night. Aquila represents the mythical eagle that was a powerful servant and messenger to the Greek god Zeus. The eagle carried his lightning bolts and was a symbol of his power as king of the gods. To find Aquila in the sky, start by locating its brightest star, Altair. It's one of the three bright stars in the summer triangle, which is super easy to pick out during summer months in the northern hemisphere. Altair is the second brightest of the three and sits at the southernmost corner of the triangle. The other stars in Aquila aren't as bright as Altair, which can make observing the constellation challenging if you live in an area with a lot of light pollution. It's easier, though, if you know how the eagle is oriented in the sky. Imagine it's flying toward the north with its wings spread wide, its right wing pointed toward Vega. If you can find Altair and Aquila's next brightest star, you can usually trace out the rest of the spread eagle shape from there. The second half of July is the best time of the month to observe Aquila, as the moon doesn't rise until later then, making it easier to pick out the constellation's fainter stars. Observing the constellation Aquila makes for a worthy challenge in the July night sky, and once you're familiar with its shape, it's hard not to see the mythical eagle soaring overhead among the summertime stars. Now, lots will be happening in the night skies around the middle of August, and I'll have more information for you closer to that time. And now I wanted to tell you about a lot of free events that are going on in the Bozeman area this week. There's going to be a presentation about hummingbirds, jewels of the sky, with General Manager Caleb at Wild Birds Unlimited at Bozeman, Thursday, July 31st at 4 p.m. They wrote, "Calling all bird enthusiasts, join us for a free, engaging presentation all about hummingbirds, those dazzling high-energy visitors to your backyard feeders. Discover fascinating facts about their migration, feeding habits, and adaptations that make them some of the most remarkable birds in the world. Whether you're a seasoned birder or simply enjoy watching hummers at your feeders, this talk will deepen your appreciation of these tiny wonders. This event is free and open to the public. Limited seating is provided. Pre-registration is encouraged but not required. To RSVP, contact the store at 406-219-2066 or email wbubozeman22@gmail.com. And of course, the Sweet Pea Festival is coming up next weekend. Tuesday on July 29th, all day. They have chalk on the walk, so you can get your free chalk from 9:30 to 10:30 a.m. at 424 East Main Street or during business hours at participating downtown businesses. Look for the Chalk on the Walk flyer in the window. Show your love of Sweet Pea and decorate between Grand and Broadway. Professional chalk artist Bill Spees will be creating a work of art in front of First Security Bank. Bill will create another piece in Lindley Park in front of the headquarters tent on Saturday. And then Thursday, July 31st, you got Music on Main from 6:30 to 8:30 p.m. Sweet Pea is sponsoring the Downtown Bozeman Association event featuring Neon Rainbow, a Bozeman-based 90s country tribute band. And also, that'll be your last chance to purchase wristbands at pre-festival prices. And then there's a juried art show Friday, August 1st through Saturday, August 31st. This year's Sweet Pea Juried Art Show will be hosted by the Bozeman Public Library. The show features a diverse collection of artwork ranging from watercolor and oil paintings to photography. Attendance is free and open to the public, and you can join them for the opening reception on August 1st from 3:30 to 5:30 p.m. at the Bozeman Public Library in the community room. And if you're into running, Saturday, August 2nd at 7:15 a.m., there is the 10K Sweet Pea Run. And at 7:25 a.m., there is the Sweet Pea 5K Run. And they write, "Put on by the Big Sky Wind Drinkers, this event is one of the oldest running races in Bozeman. It's a fun, competitive race offering cash prizes while supporting the local running community. Cheer on runners on the home stretch of the race on Main Street between Wilson and Bozeman Avenue." For registration and more info, go to winddrinkers.org/trailhead/races/sweetpea-2. And then, oh boy, this is going to be a big one, very popular. There's a dog parade, Sweet Pea Parade. Saturday, August 2nd at 9:30 a.m. Get ready for a doggone good time in Sweet Pea's dog parade. While our favorite Fidos aren't allowed to attend the festival, we're thrilled at the prospect of a plethora of partying pups promenading in Sweet Pea-themed attire. Sponsored by Bridger Veterinary Specialists and Emergency and Westpaw. Family members will stride with Sweet Pea pride alongside their furry friends. The entry fee is $10 for one dog, $15 for two, and $25 for three or more dogs, with proceeds to be donated. Visit sweetpeafestival.org/parade to register. And then also on Saturday, August 2nd at 9:30 a.m. is the Children's Fun Run. Join us for the Children's Fun Run on Main Street between 8th Avenue and Church Street as they lead the parade on Saturday, August 2nd. Children in strollers up to age 12 are invited to register online now through 9 a.m. on August 2nd. You can access the registration page at runsignup.com. All participants will receive a ribbon and post-run refreshments. The run starts at 9:30 a.m. Line up by 9:15 a.m. Children 5 and under must be accompanied by an adult. And of course, the Sweet Pea Parade is Saturday, August 2nd at 9:30 a.m. This is one of the largest and most popular parades in the state of Montana. Watch the many colorful floats featuring this year's theme, Frozen Bozeman. Come early to find parking near the parade route. Main Street will be closed to parking. The Sweet Pea Festival itself provides a variety of performances and venues for the price of an entry wristband available before or during the event. But there is another festival in town too. Have you heard of SLAM? It stands for Support Local Arts and Music. I will read from the website slamfestivals.org. And they write, "The best event of the summer returns to Bogart Park, August 2nd and 3rd, 2025. Come to the Slam Summer Festival and enjoy a celebration of Montana-made art, music, theater, dance, food, beverages, and oh, so much more. This event is free to attend and family-friendly. Hours are 10 a.m. to 7 p.m. on Saturday and 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. on Sunday. Start the weekend off right with a free community spin class Saturday beginning at 9 a.m. Sunday, join us for a free community yoga class beginning at 9:30 a.m. and then grab a mimosa at the Slam Beer Garden. While dogs are allowed, we ask that you kindly leave your furry friends at home, as the festival can be a hot and overwhelming experience for pets." Well, I mentioned that we've been kind of exploring some areas around Montana, and if being in busy Bozeman during Sweet Pea Festival is not the thing for you, and if you haven't done this in a while, I would suggest the Beartooth Highway. Go explore it. What we did, my husband and I went east on I-90, and at Columbus, we got off of I-90, we took the exit, and you go through the little town, go past Itchkepke Park, and I think that puts you on 78. And then pretty quickly you turn left on Joliet Road, which is also Road 421. And you drive that road until you get to Joliet. And there you turn right on 212. And you're going to head through Boyd and Selms and Roberts, where you need to watch out for the Amish carriages if it's a Sunday. And that gets you to Red Lodge, where 212 turns into the Beartooth Scenic Byway. And I found a little travelogue on YouTube, and I'm going to play it for you now, talking about that.
Welcome to one of the most fun driving experiences in the U.S., the Beartooth Highway. Beartooth Highway, or Highway 212, is a wilderness area between Wyoming and Montana that offers some of the most fun driving in all the U.S. This 70-mile road crests over Beartooth Pass and offers stunning views, hairpin driving turns, and a feeling of adventure you can't get on any road east of the Mississippi. All right, welcome to Fast Travel. We are in Beartooth Pass in Montana right now, going from Montana to Wyoming, the back entrance of Yellowstone National Park. All right, pause it there. Before we get any further, let's talk about the history of this place. The road was originally built in 1936, and ever since then, it has flirted with becoming part of the National Park Service. Local proposals in the 30s, 50s, and 70s ultimately went nowhere. It came close to being renamed in 1973 when the U.S. Senate introduced a bill to rename it to the James E. Murray Memorial National Highway. But ultimately, it was never signed or pursued by the Nixon administration.
I remain convinced that the denials were true.
It was designated a National Wildlife Refuge, finally, in 1978 by the Carter administration.
It's an achievement that belongs to every individual American.
Okay. Just wanted to get a little bit of history into this before jumping in. It's a seasonal road that, he's got some varmint going there.
What a bloopers.
Which is a seasonal road that goes from Montana to Wyoming and gets you to the back entrance of Yellowstone National Park. This is one of the best road trips that you are going to take in the United States because it takes you on some amazing windy roads through the Beartooth Mountains to get you some amazing vistas. Don't just take it from me, I'm just some guy. This road has gotten accolades for both its beauty and danger in publications around the world, so its reputation is well known. All right, back to me talking on location. This is not for the faint of heart, so if you do not like heights, this is not for you. But if you want to get some great looks at some amazing glacially fed mountains, this is the trail for you. Let's go check it out and we'll show you the path. We are starting this trail in the late summer from the Red Lodge, Montana side of the drive, heading south towards Beartooth Pass. We'll make our first stop at Red Creek Vista Point.
That's Rock Creek, not Red Creek. But who can blame him? It's a beautiful place. Yeah, he got excited.
This is a small pull-off right before getting to the top of Beartooth Pass and offers a small 800-foot gravel road hiking trail that stretches out right into the valley of the mountain crest, offering some stunning vistas into the Montana side of the mountain range and a look into the windy switchback roads that you took to get there. The views are so good, even the animals are soaking them in. Continuing up the mountain gets you to the crown jewel of this drive, Beartooth Pass. The top elevation of this drive is at over 10,000 feet, and surprisingly flat when you get to the top, so you're going to expect a lot of wind because there's not a lot that's going to break it up. And the roads are fairly straight and close to the mountain's edge, giving you plenty of places to stop and see the scenery.
So we're up over 10,000 feet right now. It's getting pretty cold, pretty windy. You can see some glaciers off into the distance. Below is a glacier lake. Got a rich, deep teal blue.
This awesome view is of Twin Lakes, officially on the Wyoming side of the park. This footage was taken when there was a bit of smoke in the air, but even still, the vista is breathtaking. It almost has vibes of Yosemite.
If you ask me, it rivals Glacier National Park.
But with the roads right off the side of the cliffs, this is where Beartooth Highway finally shows why it's one of the best drives in the United States. With views and twists that look like they come right out of a movie. But don't rush. Make sure to stop and keep an eye out for wildlife, like these mountain goats. Weather-tested and living right in their element, you can find them all throughout the mountains. These mountain goats spend most of their time here above the tree line grazing, and since they are above the tree line, they're fairly easy to spot. Just make sure to keep your distance, as they can be territorial. And before heading back down, you have a chance to hike some trails at Gardner Lake Trailhead, or just soak it in.
This is Shoshone National Forest at the top of Beartooth Loop. It's a hiking trail. It goes down to Sawtooth Campsite. Looks like there's some sort of glacial lake in front of us. As you can tell, there's no type of wind break here. Beautiful. It's cold.
Heading down the Wyoming side of Beartooth Pass, we see ominous signs, and it's a reminder that you are still in a wild area, and if you see any animals, like this grizzly, best to be prepared or stay a fair distance away and respect their area. Make sure to share the road with the free-range cattle as you continue to head down the mountain towards the end of the highway.
All right, we are here at Island Lake Campground, which has a beautiful island lake. It is a beautiful glacially fed lake that is fed in by the Beartooth Mountains all around us, and it is a great place to camp. And to look at the camp, plenty of people around at this moment. So I guess get here early because it does look like it fills up a bit. And one of a ton of lakes along these Beartooth paths. It is full of these glacially fed lakes that you'll see all throughout the road, and they're beautiful. So you're going to have a ton of pull-off spots. So whatever your GPS tells you, quadruple it, because you are going to be pulling over again and again and again on this road.
So if you want adventure, make sure to check out Beartooth Highway. We just scratched the surface of this awe-inspiring drive. So go out there and have your own adventure. This is Fast Travel. Now go get exploring.
My thanks to Ken Lane and Red, Blue, Black, Silver for sharing their work on Desert Oracle Radio. Thanks all the volunteers and supporters of KGVM. We need you. KGVM runs on the steam of volunteers. You can be a volunteer for KGVM, you know. Go to kgvm.org and look for the Join Us link near the bottom of the page. There you'll find all kinds of ways to help, including creating your own program. Check it out. Thank you, Sweet Pea Festival and SLAM, and thanks to science.nasa.gov and to Steve Grant and Kathy Katz for our nature readings from their books. And thank you for listening. Is there anyone you would like me to interview on a future show? Leave a voicemail or text for me at 406-404-6246. And it will go right to voicemail, but I will get the message, so don't be shy. You can hear this program broadcast on the air at 95.9 FM, Bozeman Community Radio, or you can stream it online at kgvm.org at 7 Sunday nights and 9 Monday mornings. Our past Desert Oracle Radio replay episodes are also available on demand on the kgvm.org website. I'll be back next week with more desert and mountain lore for you. Until then, keep doing good things, stay well, and sweet dreams.